back to another podcast episode. So before we get into today's episode, I wanted to quickly talk about what's going on in Mauritania right now. I did put up a post over on the Disclaimers Aside podcast Instagram. If you guys want to go just see all of the information that I'm about to cover right now, I'm also going to have some links in the show notes to some articles, but it may be a little bit challenging just because a lot of the American news media outlets aren't really talking about or covering what's happening in Mauritania. So most of what's published online is in French. So I just had to have my parents kind of translate a lot of the articles in my research, but I'll try and have some of those articles linked. I'll also just try and have some stuff just linked if you want to read about like the larger history of systemic oppression in Mauritania, just to learn more. But in the last week, protests have kind of erupted after Omar Jupp was wrongfully killed by Mauritanian police. Essentially what happened was his wife was pregnant in the hospital when he was stopped by Mauritanian police, and he had recently sold his car and had cash on him. And so when his car broke down and the police stopped him, they found that he had a lot of money on him. They demanded he gave him a cut. This is a typical practice that a lot of Mauritanian police engage in. They just kind of stop and frisk and demand that citizens give them, pay them off to leave them alone. And he was able to negotiate kind of a small cut to be released from their custody. But a few days later, he was apprehended by Mauritanian law enforcement without cause for arrest. The officers arrested Jupp, and while he was in their custody, they beat him to death throughout the night. The next morning, police called his family and claimed that he had not been feeling well and he had passed away in their custody. But when the autopsy was conducted, it was found that Omar Jupp was beaten to death, and that was the cause of his death. He left behind a wife and a newborn baby, and since Mauritanians have taken to the street in protest, the youth especially are frustrated and protesting, and protesters are currently being tear gassed, arrested, and killed in similar manners to Jupp. The Mauritanian police are extremely corrupt, especially towards Black Mauritanians, and this is not new. There are other stories like Omar Jupp's that have really just rallied people to get into the streets and start protesting. But these stories, what is happening right now, is nothing new when it comes to Mauritania's history of systemic oppression. In June of 2020, I found it really harrowing to see this article that I read that I'll link in the description box, where essentially there was a case where Mauritanian police kneeled on a man's neck in this exact same hold that led to the death of George Floyd on May 25th. Abdoulaye Sow was a victim of Mauritanian police brutality and remains a powerful reminder of racism that's rampant throughout Mauritania. This isn't new. A 2009 report by the UN found that, quote, the society has been deeply marked by continuing discriminatory practices of an ethnic nature, pervasively present in social structures, the principal institutions of the state, in particular the armed forces and justice system, and attitudes. Mauritania has faced long-standing challenges when it comes to human rights, including allegations of police brutality. Police misconduct and excessive use of force have been continuously reported in the country, often instances in which marginalized communities are targeted, such as the Haratin people and other ethnic minorities. Incidents of police brutality in Mauritania have been associated with arbitrary arrests, torture, and ill treatment of detainees. The police have been accused of using excessive force during arrests, protests, and in the context of maintaining public order. I know, speaking from my own experiences, when I go back home to Mauritania for the summer, whenever you're driving through kind of the cities, there are always checkpoints that you have to go through, and a lot of the times you get stopped and frisked, and the only way you can kind of get out of these encounters is through a bribe. There was one time, I don't think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but basically we were driving from Baba Bay back to Nouakchott. It's like about a 6-hour drive. We go to Baba Bay to kind of visit my mom's village, and we are on our way driving back with my uncle. And on our way back, we got stopped by the police because I guess they had seen that my mom had her phone out and was just basically had her phone out. And basically one of the checkpoints called an incoming checkpoint that we stopped at and told them to stop us because they assumed based on our presence that they could stop us and apprehend us. And so at that checkpoint, they stopped us and they took all of our phones away. They basically said that we were recording the police and they had to take all of our phones away. They wouldn't give it back until we basically bribed them off. And the only way we got out of that was just through family connections. So this is something that I'm definitely familiar with seeing just based on my past experiences and the summers that I've spent in Mauritania. Reports indicate that there is a lack of accountability and transparency regarding allegations of police misconduct, which contributes to this overall environment where abuses just can occur without adequate repercussions. The Mauritanian government has taken some steps to address human rights concerns, including the passing legislation criminalizing slavery in 2007 and establishing a National Human Rights Commission. However, challenges remain in ensuring the effective implementation of these measures and holding perpetrators of police brutality accountable. Mauritania is the last country to abolish slavery, but the remnants of slavery are still alive and well today. And because there isn't a large media presence in Mauritania, especially like Western media presence, a lot of the times this kind of goes undocumented or undiscussed. It kind of just happens under the table and gets brushed away. Mauritania suffers from deep ethnic discrimination. The primary divisions in Mauritania run along ethnic and racial lines, with the Moor population historically holding power and exerting dominance over other ethnic groups. Moor Mauritanians are lighter skinned and they tend to have like the complexion of Arabs, whereas the other ethnic groups tend to be black. There's this kind of a racial dynamic in which the Moors run the government, they are the law enforcement, they run the country, they are the politicians, they're the ones writing the laws. And the other ethnic black Mauritanian groups suffer from a lack of representation. The Haratian people, who are descended from black Africans enslaved in Mauritania, have been subjected to systemic discrimination and social marginalization. They often face socioeconomic disparities, limited access to education, healthcare, and employment opportunities, are more vulnerable to human rights violations. Haratian individuals have reported facing discrimination in various aspects of life, including housing, employment, and political representation. And so ethnic minority groups such as the Afro-Mauritanians, the Fulanis, the Pools, the Sununkes, and the Wolofs have also experienced similar discrimination and marginalization. They've encountered obstacles in accessing education, healthcare, and political representation. Reports indicate that discrimination against these groups has resulted in socioeconomic disparities, unequal treatment under the law, and limited participation in decision-making processes. The issue of ethnic discrimination intersects with a lot of other challenges in Mauritania, such as slavery and the caste-based discrimination. There is a caste system in Mauritania that still holds up today. And although slavery was officially abolished in Mauritania in 1981 and finally criminalized in 2007, the practice of hereditary slavery, particularly affecting the Haratian individuals, persists in some rural areas today. There was a short, I think, documentary or like 60-minute segment on this issue and how it still kind of happens informally in Mauritania. So if I can find that, I'll link that in the show notes if you want to just learn more about that. But the legacy of slavery as a whole, I think, contributes to social divisions and just in general exasperates a lot of the ethnic discrimination that's going on in Mauritania. That's just a little bit about what's happening in Mauritania. Omar Diop's story is not unique, and unfortunately, Mauritanian citizens are being killed in droves as the president refuses to even speak up on this issue. I can't say I'm surprised. This is something that I've just kind of known about throughout my entire life, and I think in general, there is just this misperception that like African countries don't experience ethnic and sectarian conflicts, just like the racism that's experienced in the West, when in reality that couldn't be further from the truth. So I'm gonna have as much as I can linked in the show notes for you guys to just check out and learn about what's happening in Mauritania. I wanted to kind of, you know, share what's going on in Mauritania, and I think there's a lot of hope in the fact that there are a lot of youth out there protesting for change. We shall see if that happens. I think it's one thing to see a lot of these injustices happening in the US, but it's a whole nother thing seeing this type of stuff happen in your homeland. So let's talk about today's podcast episode. Today, I I sat down with a friend, Anfa, to just have a fun conversation. I'm really excited for this week's podcast episode. It was a fun conversation with a good friend, and I hope you guys enjoy this week's episode. So let's go ahead and just dive into the conversation. Welcome to the podcast. Mm-hmm. How are you doing this week?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Why don't you start off by introducing yourself?
Hi, everybody. My name is Anfak Mohammed. I'm a first year studying political economy here at Cal. Other than the fact I'm a student of knowledge, I love to learn things, and yeah, I just can't wait for this podcast.
No, this girl has actually been hounding me to record this podcast episode, so I'm glad it finally happened. Who is Anfak? Okay. For anyone who doesn't know, because your social media presence is very mysterious. Yeah.
My name is Anfak Mohammed. I grew up in San Diego, California. I'm from a small city, from City Heights, Southeast San Diego. I have 12 siblings. I'm a twin.
Mashallah.
I lived in Nairobi for a while. I just recently came back this summer. Yeah, I did school out there for my own third semester, second semester.
Oh. Wait, that's in Kenya?
I went to Kenya and I did school over there.
Oh, okay.
I did school out in Kenya. If you guys don't know me, I'm like, I don't do anything. I'm just...
What? I've seen your LinkedIn presence.
Oh, yeah. I just like...
Girls involved in so many things, mashallah.
I like to go to LinkedIn. I like to go to events. I like to talk to people.
I feel like you're very well connected, especially as a freshman. Like, for a freshman, you know a lot of people on this campus.
You didn't know a lot of people, so you could...
Exactly. Okay, so what are the origins of your name?
Okay, so my name is Anfa. I was originally named Anfal after Sursa Anfal.
Oh, really?
Spoils of War. But then when I came to America, they changed out my name to a C, like on my passport. So then everybody just called me Anfa. And that's how I just continued like saying that.
Are a lot of your siblings, do they have A names?
Yeah, they're A and M. So it's like Anissa, Anfa, Ayan, Amal, Asia, Abdurrahman, Abdullah. And then the M's are like Muhammad, Mubarak.
The classics.
Yeah, it's always AM. That's our initials, AM.
That's cute. Okay, so what's a unpopular opinion you have? Disclaimers aside.
So everybody's going to drag me for this, right? But I think the Selena Gomez versus Hailey Bieber is getting to a point where it's too much. Okay. I think that as a woman... I don't think you guys should be dragging Selena Gomez to the extent that that's Selena Gomez.
Wait, no Hailey, one's dragging Selena.
The way they're dragging Hailey is actually like, come on, guys.
Unfuck. Because, okay, first of all, can we just talk about, like, are you Team Selena or Team Hailey?
I'm Team Selena, for sure.
Okay. At least we got that out of the way. Mm-hmm. I think the reason why people are going after Hailey is because the girl cannot stop copying. Copying Selena, stealing from black and brown communities. Like, she makes... things that our communities do, like lining your lips.
Mm-hmm.
She blows that up into like a trend that she created when really it's from black and brown communities.
I feel like we should drag her, right? But to the extent that you're having your husband follow her, that's a different point. Selena Gomez versus Hailey Bieber, I think that they should drag her, right? Mm-hmm. But the point that they're dragging her, saying like that's why like they're putting videos of Justin Bieber leaving her at the park, her falling on her face.
Yeah.
You don't think that's like you guys are doing too much, especially if like a man's treating a woman like that. You guys would not allow that from anybody else, but because it's like Hailey Bieber and she doesn't fit into your like your perspective of like someone you like because you're a fan base of Selena. I don't like Hailey Bieber. I think that she's like the stuff that she's been doing is not like cool at all. But then for Justin Bieber, like you guys should be posting stuff about Justin Bieber doing to her is weird. Cause come on.
I think people that are making compilations about Selena and Justin and like basically becoming people that are homewreckers online, that's too far. Because at the end of the day, they are married and you should respect their marriage. But I think people criticizing the way that Hailey is acting is totally within reason.
Okay, yeah, I would agree to that. But then leave like Justin out of it. Like, you guys don't do too much. One eye open for Selena. Selena's not with Justin.
One eye open? What is that?
One eye open for Selena. That's a Nicki Minaj thing.
Oh, okay. But also, like, I don't know. I feel like Justin's putting himself in this situation because have you seen all of the songs he's releasing? Like, watch the TikToks where people analyze his lyrics, where he's clearly talking about Selena. I feel like he put himself...
First love. I don't understand this, like, this thinking that, oh my God, he loves Selena. He never loved Hailey.
I don't necessarily agree with that.
They were so young.
And I agree. I think that people should leave their relationship alone.
And if he doesn't treat her right, like, what about that makes it cool? Like, it's okay for him to treat Haley, like, bad, but it's all right if he treats Selena good, like...
I agree. No, I agree.
That's my unpopular opinion, because I don't think that's quite all. I'm not with that.
No, I get it. I get
it. So, right now, we're, like... We're not putting nobody down. We're with Selena and we're with Haley. Haley just needs to stop playing like, girl, that's it.
I feel like when you tell people, though, that you're neither team Selena versus team Haley, like, the main conversation is not about that. The main conversation is about the copying.
I think that...
Which is just weird. Have you seen those?
Yeah, I've seen
it. It's weird.
But some of it... Please, like, some of it's bored out of, like, it's blown out of proportion.
Like what?
The eyebrows one, definitely, like, she should.
Oh, I didn't see the eyebrows one, but the cooking show.
Okay, the cooking show.
The line about her heart.
Yeah, I think that was not blown out of proportion. Like, you guys, no, it was blown out of proportion. Because if you think about it, like, I want people to know me from my heart. Like, come on.
I just think that, with everything else, makes her look bad.
But to a certain extent, if she's copying her so... But my thing is, don't drag her for this, but I don't think it's a big deal, but when Selena did her eyebrows and she said, Bella Hadid looks so pretty, did anybody drag her for that?
Oh, wasn't that how all this drama started?
It did. That's how it started. Nobody dragged her for that.
So people... I'm so confused on how people got from the eyebrow thing to the whole Hailey Bieber situation. Like, why was Hailey brought into that from... The eyebrows.
So Kylie Jenner posted a picture of her eyebrows with Hailey on FaceTime with her with the eyebrows, and they're like zoomed in.
Oh, and the eyebrows were the same?
Mm-hmm.
We have our friend in the room.
Okay, it started because Selena said she accidentally laminated her eyebrows too much, right?
Yeah.
And then I guess the next day or a few days, or I don't know with the timeline, but Kylie Jenner and Hailey were on FaceTime. And they both showed their eyebrows, and Kylie posted a picture and of her eyebrows saying, not an accident.
Mm.
Oh.
Yeah, and then they posted another picture of each other's eyebrows, and, like, I think people kind of thought she was, like, throwing shade or, I don't know. It was, like, a sneak diss.
And you know when she did that? God timing is always right. She made a TikTok saying that, and they were saying that it has to do with Selena Gomez getting caught by paparazzi and then posting a picture of her with a swimsuit.
Okay, I see. Honestly, all of this celebrity drama is too much for me.
It's too much. And the Shade Room never posted it. So, what did that say?
The Shade Room. Not the Shade Room. Okay, so going back to what we were kind of touching on before, where are you from ethnically and geographically?
I am ethnically Somali. Geographically, I come from the Ogaden region in Somalia, I guess. I was born in Nairobi, Kenya, and they have Somalis out there.
Wait, you were born in Kenya?
Yeah, I was born in Kenya.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Born in Kenya, Kenya.
How old were you when you moved?
Two or three, I forgot. Two.
Oh, okay, so you don't remember, like, that period of time as well?
Mm-hmm.
Are Kenya, I'm so bad at geography, are Kenya and Somalia close, is that why?
Yeah, the borders are really close to each other.
Interesting. Did you know that people these days, like, one of the top countries that people want to travel to in Africa is Kenya?
For real?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because Kenya is so, like, it's like America. People, like...
Really?
Yeah, they're, like, their structural is so, like, their structure
their
out
infrastructure?
There, their architecture is so pretty. Like, it's like America.
Really? I heard they have beautiful nature, too.
Yeah. And you could pet the giraffes over there, like...
I feel like it's so funny because when you tell people that you're African, they always think of, like, Kenya. Like, they think of, like, the tall grass and, like, the giraffes and the elephants and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting because in Mauritania, we don't have... Like, Mauritania is very different from, like, what people traditionally think of when you say you're African.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Kenya definitely reflects that.
Mm-hmm. But typically, whenever I talk to anybody and, like, they know I'm from Africa, they already guess where I'm from.
Oh, they guess that you're Somali?
Yeah,
Somali. I could kind of see it. I feel like you do have Somali features.
Yeah.
So are there a lot of Somalis in San Diego too?
Yeah, there's a big, huge Somali population in San Diego.
I used to live in San Diego for a year, but I lived in the part that didn't have a lot of Africans.
You need to come to East San Diego.
I really do. Can you talk about what your last trip to Kenya was like?
Okay, so I went to Kenya this last summer in 2022. And Kenya was, like, when I went there, it was more like a vacation because I went for the summer after my graduation, so it really wasn't, like, anything new to me because, my initial first visit was 11th grade year, my junior year, second semester. And when I went out there, I was literally like, it was a culture shock, I would say that for sure.
Really? Even after living, being born there?
Mm-hmm. Because when I went out there, like, I'm like, San Diego's Somali, but it's like, we're all first generation, but we all like are adapted and assimilated into the culture here.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was out there, everybody spoke Somali. Some people spoke Swahili too. And then there were Jilbabs out there too.
Really? Mm-hmm. In Kenya?
Yeah, they were.
Does Kenya have a lot of Muslims?
Yeah. Where I went in Nairobi, they had a lot of Muslims out there. They had a lot of Somali people living there too.
Oh, because I have a family friend who's from Kenya and she's also Muslim. But I never perceived Kenya as like a Muslim country or a country
they
with
had a lot of
good
Christians out there too, but they had a lot of Muslims out there when I went. Like, they had mosques everywhere, they had Adhan praying. All the men, I was telling Sabrina them yesterday, I was like, all the men used to run to pray.
Really? I love
time.
That. That's one of the things I love about going back home is like, mm-hmm. hearing the Adhan being called out into the city like 5 times a day. It's really beautiful.
The fruit there is clean.
The fruit?
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, fruit, food in general, anything outside the U.S., way better.
The people out there were really, really nice. The only thing that was different was like going to school, because I went to school over there, right? And
yeah.
You have to pay to go to school.
What do you mean? Like on a daily basis?
On a daily basis. Everybody that goes there, you have to pay to go to school.
Really?
So like education, like you would have to be rich, not like
to have a good education.
To have a really good education, you would have to be rich. So I had to go. My mom has to pay for going to school. It was $70. It wasn't a lot.
$70 a day?
$70 a month.
Okay, that still adds up.
Mm-hmm.
Also, with a lot of kids, like
mm-hmm.
your family, that really adds up.
And it was 7,000 shillings, because a dollar there is 100 shillings. Yeah, schools, there's no, people have to pay to go to school, so some people, but their education, when you are in the schools, like, they're, like, learning top-of-the-top math, top-of-the-top chemistry.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Mm-hmm. But they don't have, like, projectors and stuff, like, he's writing on the chalkboard.
Yeah, my parents, whenever they describe when they were younger, the teachers didn't have any, like, materials or anything, they would just start lecturing, and then you would just have to copy down, like,
you
what they're saying.
You have to
just crazy.
You have to buy the books yourself, write everything in, like, a notebook, and then, like, show the teacher so you can get signed off. And
dang.
I would go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. No, not Saturday, Sunday. So it would be Sunday to Friday. I'm going to school.
Oh, Sunday through Friday? So then you just have Saturday off?
Saturday off, and then Friday after Jumu'ah.
Oh. Why do they do it like that?
Because my siblings, because they did Duxie too. I did Duxie like one, but then, Duxie is like.
Yeah, I was like, wait, what is that?
Duxie's like, hold on, school, so they did Duxie as well.
Oh.
Yeah, so they would go like 6 a.m., come home 5 p.m.
I feel like your Quran is probably really good.
What?
If you learned it. Yeah, if you learned it in Somalia.
Okay.
Or Kenya. I really need to stop.
No, I have not went to Somalia. I'm going to go to Somalia.
Inshallah. No, you
so,
should. Wait, so do you have family still in Somalia?
Yeah, I have family in Somalia. I just didn't go because during that time, like, my friends went, but during that time, I don't know if they were dropping bombs. I forgot. But something was happening where we couldn't even go. Even then, I don't think my mom would, like, went because, like, she lives in Kenya. We have a house out there.
So does your immediate family all live in San Diego, or do they do part-time? Or they just randomly decided to move back?
Is immediate family like my cousin?
So your parents and your siblings. Are they all here or?
Yeah, my parents are all in the same house.
Okay.
The same parents, yeah. I have like an older sister, 2 older sisters and an older brother. So everybody's here, but they're all under the age of 23, so like they're all young. But my immediate family, like my cousins.
Yeah, your first, that I don't think that's immediate family. Immediate family is like your siblings and your parents, but in terms of your cousins, are a lot of them back home or are they here?
They're in Minnesota or they're in Kenya.
Oh, I heard Minnesota also has
yeah,
a, lot
Minnesota
of
a lot of Somalis.
That's funny.
That's where they'd be at.
You kind of already kind of touched on this, but how do you feel like growing up with a presence of a Somali and African community kind of shaped you as a person and as the person you are today?
I think that growing up around like your community, like super, super vital. I don't know, just for me, growing up, like everybody that I knew just because they're like Somali and Somali, like it goes hand in hand with like Islam, I would say, to a certain extent, because everybody that I know was Muslim. So because I was around like so much Muslims and they were Somali, we all went to the same masjid, we all prayed together, we all like lived in the same area, the same neighborhood, we went to the same masjid, schools, shopping, everybody knows everybody, right? So coming here was super surprising.
Oh, Berkeley?
Yeah, because nobody, like, it's like It's very white.
It's predominantly white. Because I remember one of the first times I talked to you, mm-hmm. you were telling me that it's so white here. And I was telling you, like, this is the most black people I've seen in my life besides Africa. Because I'm from Orange County and I used to live in Illinois. I lived in San Diego. But everywhere I've lived, like, there have been no Africans, mm-hmm. very little black people, very little Muslims. So I don't know. Being at Berkeley, like, this is the most Africans I've seen in my life.
Like,
which is crazy
for me. Like, I'm just like, and I don't know how to navigate between, like, not to say like it's a bad thing, but I don't know how to navigate between Arabs because I've never seen that like it's not dark shade or anything. Like,
no, but like they do treat us differently. Like, I don't know if you've experienced this, but when I run into Muslims on campus and like Arab like hijabi girls, I'll say salams and they will literally not say salams back.
They won't say salam back, and then
it's crazy to me.
I take an Arabic class and I'm like talking to them. Usually, like, someone will talk to me, but it's, like, very, like, hard to, just because, like, I'm not Arab.
Which is crazy to me, because it's, like, even though we come from different cultures, we all still share the same religion. And mm-hmm. I feel like there is a huge cultural aspect in Islam, too. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we're completely different.
Mm-hmm.
It's just weird to me. I don't know. I feel like even though I haven't been surrounded by other African Muslims growing up, I always felt, like, I typically would be friends in Sunday school and stuff with more like Desi, Pakistani, mm-hmm. like Afghan, those people more than Arabs.
Like, I've never seen so much in my life. Like,
that's
some
crazy.
Some of them are like, I've never heard that. What is that before? Like,
what, Somalia?
No, like, I've like Desi's like, I've never heard that term before.
Really?
I've never seen them in that, like,
in that
big
context.
Amount, big amount, like, I've never seen them.
That's crazy.
Like, when I've never seen them, like, so much people who are Desi.
Wow.
Wait, how was your experience living, like, not with a lot of, like, black
Muslims? Honestly, I personally didn't love it. I always, whenever I look at other people who come from places where they have a lot of people from the same country as them, or just a lot of Africans in general, I'm always jealous because I feel like it's just so nice to grow up or be around people that understand, even if it's not from the same country, even if it's just other Africans in general,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of African cultures are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it was definitely very isolating growing up in Orange County where there was like barely any Muslims. Like, I was the only hijabi at my high school except for my sister.
Mm-hmm.
And the few other Muslims that were there, we didn't even talk much about being Muslim or anything like that. So...
Mm-hmm.
I feel like for me in my life until I came to college, like, Islam and like my life felt very separate. Like, I had
mm-hmm.
my Sunday school life and my Sunday school friends, and then I would have like my friends in high school, and then when I came to college, I feel like those two things kind of became one, or they kind of merged.
Would you say that, like, it made you stronger, like, in terms of your deen, just because, like,
100%. Because even when I think about, like, because I have a lot of cousins back home,
mm-hmm.
and I think about how they live in a society where Islam is just the norm. Like, that's
mm-hmm.
that's it for them. I feel like living in the West, when you have to constantly choose to, like, follow the straight path,
mm-hmm.
that strengthens your faith.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if
I
you feel the same.
Agree. I would totally
like, it's
agree.
So much, it's so much harder to practice your faith here when...
It is super
it's not
hard
the norm.
Just because you're, like, not surrounded by people who do the same things that you do.
Exactly.
But that's why it's important. Like, you step out of that bubble, and then you talk to people who come from different backgrounds and come from different walks of life, just so
yeah.
you can experience what they experience. Because growing up, like, I just seen, like, Muslims were just, like, they were just my girls. Like, that's what Saturday, Sundays, I'm always around them. And that's why, like, when it comes to, like, Somali girls, even, like, not even Somali girls, just, like, Muslim, like, black girls, like, I'm always surrounded by them.
No, that's good.
That's
I love
and getting
that.
To know them, and just, like, it creates a sisterhood, you know?
If the digital sisterhood.
It's a sisterhood that everybody needs. But
honestly, yeah.
But coming in here, I feel like it's a test.
It
you
really
have
is.
To do a lot of things. We don't have to go to gym. It's not a lot of them. You don't, like... Not, like
no, quite
of,
literally,
like,
yeah.
Nobody's, like, checking us to go to gym. Nobody's checking
yeah.
us to, like, go pray. Nobody's checking us to do a lot of things. Like, party, like... But it, like, just because we want to, we do it.
Okay, so how are you liking Berkeley so far? It's almost been a year. What are your thoughts on Berkeley?
Oh my god, so I think Berkeley is, I like Berkeley. A lot of people don't
yeah.
like Berkeley.
A lot of people don't
like
it
Berkeley.
Here.
Just because I think that, like, despite, like, people don't like it because of the location and, like, like the aspect in terms of the city or like food. To be honest, I feel like that's not a big important factor for me. As long as I have like people I can connect to, and I feel like I found my people that I connect to, I can deal with it. It's just like in terms of school, that's what I don't like
the academics. Because you mentioned you're polyecon, right?
Mm-hmm. Political economy.
She used to be poli-sci, but then she ditched us because we were too white.
Yeah, I could not deal with it. Plus, political economy gives you that, like...
The extra edge.
I can jump into business, learning Arabic, master a language, and I pick my own concentration.
Oh, but you pick your own concentration in poli-sci, too.
Yeah, but you could do race and law. Like, I go to law school.
Oh, yeah.
I could even just focus on, like, East Africa.
Really? Wait. It gets that niche?
Yeah.
That's crazy because in poli-sci, they only have four options: comparative theory, international relations, and American politics.
I wanted to do international relations when I was poli-sci, but then, no, you could pick your own major. Like, you make up the four classes that you want, and then you submit it.
Honestly, I'm an international relations concentration, and even in the IR classes that they have on campus, they don't have any African politics classes.
When you go to your classes, do they actually share different perspectives? Like, honestly, like, is their teaching actually like world history, or are they teaching like from American? Like,
it's definitely a very Eurocentric lens on things.
Yeah,
it's because, I mean, most of the professors are white, so they're just repeating what they learned or how they view the world. So it's unfortunate. What about in polyecon?
I'm taking a global 45 class, and we literally learn about different aspects of America, and she calls it out.
Really?
Time, like, she just like, time, this is a very Eurocentric thing, like, it came after Jesus died, because it was BC, CE. We learned about that. We learned about, like, the Crusades going to different countries. We learned about the different tactics that, like, Islam uses versus, like,
other religions.
And she talks about how, like, Islam, like, you're not supposed to kill people, because they used to kill people, they used to take their women, and how, like, we never did that before.
Yeah. Is she Muslim or no?
She's not. But
she just knows a lot about
it. She knows a lot about it. She even posted a picture, like, in one of our last class, where it was, like, it's very controversial, but it was, like, a niqabi, like, a whole entire niqabi versus someone who was not wearing a niqabi, and I think they were just, like, wearing, like, a bikini and pants, and the girl was just like, oh my god, she's so covered, what is she doing? And then while the niqabi was like, oh my god, if she's not covered, what is she doing? And she was sharing that, like, what is freedom? And who decides what freedom is? And what makes it all right for people to say that because she's covered, she's oppressed? And what makes it right for us to be like, because she's not covered, she's oppressed by, like, you know?
It's crazy.
So she pointed out, like, she teaches stuff like that.
Love that.
Good and interesting fact.
What?
You know the croissant, the one that we make? The one that we eat, like, croissant?
Yeah. So, from France?
Yeah. France made it because after Islam, the Ottoman Empire was, like, fighting them. They made it because it symbolized the Islamic, like, symbol. Because of
the crescent.
So when they eat it, it's like they're eating, like, Muslim.
Islam. Mm-hmm. What?
I know. She taught us about that.
That's so crazy. No, I feel like France really has a deep history of Islamophobia because I've never seen such worse Islamophobia. Like, whenever I think about how hard it is growing up as a black Muslim in America, I remind myself that it could be way worse, like, if I was just born in France, because I feel like over there it's just to a different degree. But did you know France has a lot of black Muslim people?
I do know that. But it's, like, it's interesting.
I think it's because... Actually, I took a French politics class, so they kind of talked about this. But basically, they were saying that because there's such a huge wave of immigrants from North and West Africa, and probably East Africa too, into France, the Islamophobia is like a direct backlash to that. Just like how the U.S. has a lot of legislation against, like, Hispanics, it's kind of a similar relationship, but in France. I don't know. You will never catch me dead living in France.
I don't even want to go because they asked me we're going to go for study abroad. I said, I don't want to go to European countries.
You said you want to go to a European?
I do not want to go to European countries. But that's just because I don't, like, when I want to go somewhere, I want to go, like, to the deep roots. Like, I want to go to Ghana. Look at Ghana for a little bit.
Interesting.
I'll visit, like...
You should go to Somalia.
For study abroad?
I just can't believe you're Somali, but you've never been to Somalia. But you've been to, like, Kenya and stuff like that.
I want to go, but I have not been to Somalia.
I have a quick question. This is totally unrelated. Some people say that they're from Somaliland. What is the history of that?
Okay, so Somaliland is a region that's outside of Somalia, and after, like, there's, like, tribal wars going on. So, I guess they disassociated themselves from Somalia, but that's just because of, like, it's not genocide that happened between, like, Islanders versus Somalis, and now they have like their own territory, their own land. So they're Somaliland, Somaliland. They have their own currency. Not that they have their own currency, but they have their own passport, they have their own, they say they have their own everything, and like they're trying to be recognized right now. They wanted to gain independence from Somalia.
Okay, so they used to be a part of Somalia.
Yeah, they used to be a part of Somalia.
Okay. Yeah, because I've seen people either put Somaliland in their in their bio, or they say they're from Somaliland.
Yeah, my friends are landers.
That's really cool.
It's really interesting because the UN hasn't like
recognized them.
Yeah, but they should be recognized.
It's just like Western Sahara. Mm-hmm. Like the UN doesn't really recognize them as their own country, but they kind of are.
They are their own country.
But yeah, that's really interesting. I feel like Berkeley has a really bad culture of people just taking themselves way too seriously. And I feel like people make it way more competitive than it needs to be. I feel like some people here just want to be, or want to say that they're working hard and doing all of these things. Mm-hmm. And they make it more stressful for themselves. And that in turn like creates a culture of competitiveness.
It's very competitive, which sometimes I'm like questioning on the reason why. Because why?
It doesn't have to be like this.
But people say no shade to us, but they say because we didn't get into like Stanford, we're trying to make up
for it. We're trying to make up for it. No, but some people here are UCLA rejects too.
Mm-hmm.
Like I wanted to go to UCLA. But also like I see UCLA and Berkeley. I know some people think Berkeley's better or whatever. I see them as kind of equal.
I see Berkeley as like, oh my god, you go to Berkeley. Well, I see UCLA as, oh, you go to UCLA? Well, you must have a lot of fun.
I mean, yeah, no, that's true. Because have you seen the events UCLA is putting on?
Yeah, for the culture, yeah, I love that.
It looks so much fun. They literally had, my sister told me last night she went to, I think it was like a black fashion show last night.
Yeah, they did. UCLA. I saw someone walking there doing the Rihanna dance.
The what?
Rihanna
from the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
I love that for them. Whereas I feel like here, the orgs are great, and I feel like they do foster community, but I think sometimes they can be very focused on professional development and not as much on the social aspect of building a community. Like, that's one of my main complaints about the general MSA here is that...
You think so?
Yeah, I feel like they're just... They provide a lot of resources, which is great, but they don't balance like the social aspect of it well enough, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's because I just came from a different school where MSA was, I mean, outside of like obviously like the religion and all of that, the social aspect was like number two. Like,
they but were I always having socials. For MSA, like, I'm surprised they even do socials. Like, I'm expecting girls to be in this room, guys to be in this room.
No.
I'm shocked.
It's weird that they're not doing socials. I'm telling you, this is not normal. Go to any other school and they do, they're a lot more social.
I don't know. But to be honest, I don't know if I'm like, I have not been putting myself, like, to even know what MSA is doing, like, which is like,
oh, yeah, I recently just tapped out of MSA. Like, I go to Juma and I'll go to, like, events here and there, but... Yeah.
I would have done that, but...
I'm not trying to, like, make friends in the general MSA.
I'm trying to make friends, but it's... No, I'm not.
No, exactly. I feel like once... And I feel like FAM does that. Like, FAM supplements that.
Mm-hmm.
FAM is the Black Muslim Oregon campus that we're both in.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually both board members.
Yes.
As of recently.
FAM does do that. It, like, fosters a community that everybody needs. But I feel like they don't, like... It's just how MSA is like, run by a lot of, like...
Arab and Desi people.
I feel like there's no representation for me to even like feel welcome. That's
they're
it.
Yeah, they really, yeah. It's the
at
lack
least
of representation.
Person, like just
at least
person.
One Black Muslim on the board. It's crazy.
No, I just can't. But
it's crazy.
But some of them were so nice to me. Like when we went, they were so nice to us. Like
where did you go?
Anything? We went to the community night.
Oh, I went there too. It was the beginning of the year.
No, they had one second semester in spring.
Oh. Was that one? That one wasn't at Berkeley Masjid, right?
No.
I think I missed the second community night, but I went to the first social that they had at Berkeley Masjid. And it was funny because they brought someone who was on MSA board, like I think a president from 5 years prior.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about how MSA needs to be more inclusive. And he was like, look around the room, think about who's not in the room today.
Mm-hmm.
And think about how you can make them feel more included in MSA. And it's funny because I think it was just me and Abrar from FAM that night.
But how could you make it more inclusive?
I think because they're a bigger organization that's lasted for a long time and they're trying to serve the entire Muslim community,
mm-hmm.
they have to be the ones to come to like the Black Muslim community and try and ask how they can represent us better. And I think first of all, they need to have Black Muslims on board if they want to actually represent the larger Black Muslim community.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think it's like, the culture of MSA starts with the board.
Mm-hmm.
The board sets the culture. And so if board is not actively trying to foster a healthy culture where people of like all colors,
mm-hmm.
all backgrounds feel welcome in MSA, they're the ones that are at fault. Personally, that's just me.
Okay, I would agree with that. But also, you have to understand, I feel like from their perspective, it's like they like represent such a huge community and the Black community is so small. But I understand from your perspective,
yeah.
at least one person on board, even as a committee chair, would be respectful, you know?
Yeah.
Not respectful would be cool, but...
I don't know, I feel like there's a long way to go with them.
Mm-hmm. A long way for sure.
What are your favorite and least favorite aspects of Berkeley?
My favorite are the people. I love the people. I love the club. The people here make the Berkeley experience less painful. And what I hate about Berkeley is the culture of, like, grinding every single day. Not that, I just hate the fact that people don't like the gatekeepingness. That's what it
the
is.
The gatekeeping is crazy.
That's actually sickening because why do you want to gatekeep so much? Like, girl.
No, exactly. I remember before I came here, I heard stories of people in the CS department who would develop programs that would erase your code. Wallahi, when I heard that, I was like, y'all are doing too much. I
used to talk with a girl, like, apparently, like, she unshares all her docs with her friend before a final.
Unshares
all her notes, all her documents, all her friends, not but all her classmates before her final.
That's crazy.
And they were just like, that's Berkeley for you. Like, people are gonna do that to you.
That is so crazy. See, that's the thing. When I heard about that, I just made sure that when I was like talking to people and like making friends, that I didn't surround myself with those people. Like, I really don't surround myself with competitive people.
I feel like you could be competitive, but it's just like to what extent, like, when you...
Sabotage is just too far.
But also, I feel like the weed out culture makes it where you have to sabotage someone because if you don't get it, like, someone else will, like, you know?
Yeah. I guess that's not an issue for me because I'm a transfer student. So
yeah.
The weeder classes, for people who don't know, it's, like, classes where they try and weed out certain people out of a major,
mm-hmm.
right? That's the purpose of it.
Yeah.
And so that's, like, a culture you experience more as an underclassman. Whereas when you're an upperclassman, I think people do mellow out because everyone's declared by then.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as difficult.
But also I feel like Berkeley, some of it is like cap. We were talking about this, but like some of the classes that are here like that are like, because she takes CS 61A, I'm in Math 1A, and it's not as hard as people make it. I would say
really?
It's a lot of effort you have to put in, but it's not that like you're going to die.
Okay, so you're saying... when people talk about the class, they exaggerate it.
Definitely.
Yeah, because they made me... Bruh, 61A, I should have took it last semester because I was in the class, and the way people were talking about it, they scared me into dropping it.
Mm-hmm.
And
what?
But I didn't really... like, it was the first week. But then I'm taking it this semester, and I'm just like... It just takes a lot of time and effort, you know?
It takes a lot of time. That's
it's
what it is.
It's tedious work, but it's totally manageable.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Because with math, like,
it's a weeder class. It's the weeder class, actually.
People are trying to weed
yes.
you out before you even get there, is what they're
yeah,
trying to do.
It's
the
first class
for
CS.
Yes,
yeah,
oh,
because
class.
For calc, I was so scared. I was like, I'm not going to take no math class here at Berkeley. Like,
you're just going to do it at community college.
Yeah, but I took trigonometry in high school, like college trigonometry. I took algebra, we took stats. And then she took it before, right? And then I was surprised. Like, I was just like, she took it and she was like, it's not that bad. So when I'm taking it, I'm expecting the worst just because everybody talks about it being so hard.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's just
that's
a lot of time
thing.
And effort you have to put into it.
That's the thing. It's interesting because I transferred from another UC and I always tell people that I feel like Berkeley classes... and this is speaking from a poli-sci perspective because it's obviously different major to major.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Berkeley does make you do a little bit more work, but the level of difficulty of the classes is pretty similar to at Santa Cruz,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. And so I don't know. I just feel like I was low-key scared to come here because I thought my GPA would tank and that the classes would be so much harder and that things would be way more cutthroat and that... there wouldn't be, like, a support system, like, on the academic end
mm-hmm.
of things. But it's, I think people just exaggerate things sometimes because they want to see him.
They definitely exaggerate that. The only thing that they don't exaggerate is the consultant clubs.
The clubs, yeah.
That's
the,
it.
The orgs, they really do gatekeep. That's my least favorite aspect, is the competitive culture of the clubs.
But to be honest, I understand, because once I get into one, I'm going to gatekeep.
Stop.
Die.
Stop. Are you in a consulting club?
No, I'm not.
Okay, would you ever join one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Did you try this year?
Uh-uh. I didn't try.
You should try your sophomore year, because usually the more you, like, the later you try and get into consulting, the, like, they don't accept transfers.
For real?
Yeah, for the, a lot of them, they gatekeep against transfers. There's, like, a transfer discrimination thing.
Yeah.
And so they started a transfer
consulting
club for that.
That's
reason.
So interesting. Why?
Yeah. It's because they claim that they want first or second years so that they have the time to mold you into their club's values. But really, that's just a nice way of saying that they see transfers as less than first years.
Mm.
Which is crazy to me, because people decide to go to community college
decide
to transfer for different reasons, not just that they couldn't get in the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for some people, it's financial.
That's
and I think people bring different things to the table as transfer students, so.
But also the stuff that they're molding you into, I'm sorry, like, it should not take that much hours.
It really doesn't. That's the thing. And what makes me so annoyed is because I feel like some of the clubs on campus, the orgs, they're so hard to get into, but then you don't actually do that much.
When you get into it. Which is weird. But also a lot of the stuff that they, like, are teaching, I would say is, like, valuable. And to essence, you know what I find weird? It's okay, like, if they want to gatekeep. I understand this. Berkeley, you guys are competitive, but it's a DEI initiative that they have. All of them believe in diversity, equity, and inclusion, and they all have a DEI head in every one of their, like, clubs, which is weird because it's just like, okay, you guys are in charge of diversity, equity, and inclusion, but you don't have nobody that represents anybody, not even just, like, Black students. I don't see no Latinx students.
Yeah.
It's majority Asians and white people.
Yeah, and a lot of East Asian.
This might be controversial, but then a lot of Asians, they make up the large majority here at Berkeley, so I don't even think they should be underrepresented, but...
100%. I always tell people, if you want to know how diverse an organization is, look at their board.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they have a lot of Black and brown students,
mm-hmm,
in the actual, as general members,
mm-hmm,
look at the board. Who's in charge?
Mm-hmm. I would agree. 100%.
What advice do you have for people who are struggling to find community in college?
I would say the first thing is, I talked to my sister because my sister goes to UCSD and they're known for UC
Socially
Dead.
Dead.
Yeah, so I tell her all the time, number one, you have to step out of your comfort zone. You have to go out and you have to talk to people. You have to literally go join clubs, especially if you're not, like, one thing that everybody does here is, because the club doesn't fit into their, like, ideal standard of what they want to do and everything that's transactional for them, they're not going to go to the club and just, like, want to learn about anything that they're doing.
So,
which is something that I don't recommend you do, just, like, especially since you're in college, go out to different clubs, even if you don't like it, and just see what they're about. And maybe you will one day like it.
That's true. You may pivot and decide to switch
careers,
or I think also it's healthy to be interested in things outside of your career and not be a one-dimensional person.
Mm-hmm. I would totally agree, because, and then step out of things that you, like, is seen as, like, you're not supposed to do, or you never had the opportunity to. Like, I went camping, and I've never been camping in my whole time.
Oh, with the outsiders?
Yes.
I plan on coming to an outsiders trip, inshallah, this semester. I'm not a nature girl, but I'll come.
I just went because I was just like, I've never had the opportunity to ever do it. I'm gonna go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looked fun.
It looked really fun, and literally more on hammocks. We were reading books. Everybody was just, like, to themselves. We were in nature. We went on a hike. Like, no beef, no wahala. It was just vibes.
College is definitely the time to try out new things. And it doesn't hurt. You're not going to lose anything.
Try out new things. Try out a lot of professional development stuff. I'm going to be honest. I know you're going
to
like
me. I need to do that more.
But Berkeley, like once you talk to other, like, once you talk to other people from different schools, you realize a lot, especially, I don't know, for me, especially, like, I've never seen people talk about LinkedIn. I've never seen people talk about their headshots. I've never seen people talk about their elevator pitch, or, like, their elevator pitch. I've never seen people talk about, like, working within different companies, because nobody will ever teach you. Especially, like, I don't know, it's probably because we all have, like, a lot of us never got to a point where we graduated college, but nobody's, like, talking about it. So when I'm here, I'm trying to get everything that I know, because Like, I need to know about how to get an internship. I need to know how to secure that, like, six-figure salary. I need to know everything.
100%. And I'm a woman, so. I love it. And I've seen your LinkedIn, too. Fire.
You should
went to LinkedIn? A conference over winter break.
It was fun.
Like, that's crazy.
But I think that just, like, LinkedIn, like, is the source of all networking.
It really is. People don't realize how powerful LinkedIn is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I told my friend, because she didn't have a LinkedIn until this past year, and we're 3rd years in college.
Mm-hmm.
I told her, you can't go another day without a LinkedIn.
I told all my friends, make a LinkedIn. I feel like, you know what it is? Like, I feel like I want to, like, maximize every opportunity that I'm giving.
Yeah.
Just so when I go back, I can, like, teach people the importance of just, like, networking and, like, utilizing all your resources so you can make that, like, salary. And, like, you can be in places that, like, we don't see people who usually typically look like us, like, are in.
100%.
So I'm going to network. I'm going to talk to people. Even if, like, that club does not, like, reach any of my, like, I'm, like, political economy, I'm going to join the engineering society just because.
Are you actually in the engineering society?
I'm in Black Student Engineering.
Wow.
I'm with them. They're besties. I'm sorry. They literally, like, I feel like they teach you so much. And I'm not even an engineering student. I'm not even a STEM student. But I'm just going to go just so, like, I can, like, learn from everything that they're saying and then, like, apply it. Because they do have the resources, they do have the internships, I'm sorry, but...
Yeah, no,
you have to learn.
If you look on LinkedIn, all of the internships are always CS or engineering-related internships.
And then when you go back home, nobody ever asks you, like, how's Berkeley? Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's the first thing that they're saying. Oh my god, you go to Berkeley, you're so smart. Yeah, that's the one thing I hate. I don't like telling people where I am. That's why my Instagram
people are
the reason. I do not want nobody knowing I go to Berkeley.
Really?
Because people think that it's synonymous with being smart. And it's just like, no, it's not. I feel like...
You are smart, okay?
No, but you know what I do think? I was so excited the other day. I was saying how because I go to Berkeley, I feel like you saying that, like, because I
people
go to Berkeley,
have...
that I'm smart is doing a disservice to me because of all the hours I put in to the school. Like, I'm coming into the school, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, like, going to these classes, right? And a lot of these people, they have, like, AP, like, they do AP classes. They're, like, they went to tutoring before, right? And I'm going like one-on-one with these students, and I'm in these classes, and we're learning at the same time, right? And they already know stuff that I'm learning. When I'm in a classroom with them, I'm not smart.
You're saying you have to put in extra work and you work really hard.
And that doesn't make me smart. So when you're saying, like, oh, you go to work and you're smart, just like, no, I actually put in a lot of work.
Yeah, no,
I
get what
smart,
you're saying.
It's probably I have a smart way of, like, maneuvering myself in these spaces, but it's just, like, I don't think that we're all synonymous with smart because... What we do study 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
We're working 24/7. We have a lot on our plate 24/7, and it's not because we're smart.
That's
true.
I'm
not sorry.
No, I get it. Cause some people are naturally smart, but not everyone is like that. Some people have to work twice as hard to even just grasp the same exact material.
Mm-hmm.
And
then when you talk
to
people, and you say you're from Berkeley, like, there's, like, an elitist, like, conversation.
Yeah, like, people put us on a pedestal.
They put us on a pedestal, and it's just, like...
It's kind of crazy, though, because, I don't know, I just have a weird dysmorphia with it because I transferred from UCSC, and so I feel like just even seeing how people treat you with so much more respect just because I go to a different school, even though I'm the same exact person,
mm-hmm.
is crazy to me. It's just weird.
But that's why I don't like telling people, and then I'm scared of evil eye, like...
Oh, yeah. No, I get it. I definitely get it.
Evil eye, and then, I don't know. I just feel like going to Berkeley is not, like, who I want. Like,
you don't
want
your identity to just be tied to...
To being go to Berkeley life, no.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
I think it's important to find your identity outside of your college. Some people, their identity is the college that they go to. They eat, sleep, and breathe that, but I don't think
yeah.
that's healthy.
But even then, Berkeley is just Berkeley. Like, all it is to me is just, like... Another way, like, that I can achieve my goals. Berkeley is just, like, a milestone.
Yeah.
And when people be like, oh, she goes to Berkeley, I don't only go to Berkeley this girl. Like,
I have other things going on.
I don't only just go to Berkeley.
Yeah. How have you integrated practicing Islam in college?
I have friends who are Muslim. And I try to always, like, I'm typically just looking for people who are Muslim just to be friends with. Just so, like, people understand me. They understand, they respect it. And people who are not Muslim, I'm still friends with them. I usually just stick to, like, you have to be some sort of African.
Because you have to have that commonality.
Mm-hmm. And that respect.
Or similar morals, I feel like.
Yeah. So when I'm friends with Muslims, like, we're going to all fast together, we're going to all go pray together, we're going to all go to the masjid together, and then making, like, Muslim friends. That's why when I see you guys at Jummah, that's why I said, like, yeah, it's not that hard not to practice, just because. Another thing that also, like, my experience is different than everybody else's just because I wear the hijab.
Yeah.
If I didn't wear the hijab, I might have a different conversation because it might have been a little bit harder just because, like, people wouldn't know that I'm Muslim.
Yeah.
Or people would have, like something else to say, which is, like, I don't know, that's, which is weird in my opinion, you shouldn't like do that, but then because I wear the hijab, it's a little bit easier because people already know that I'm Muslim.
Yeah, unfortunately it is, like, you get treated differently as a hijabi. Mm-hmm. People have different perceptions of you and they can be good or bad, but mm-hmm. that is kind of the reality of it. Like, I remember over winter break I was filming a Q&A for my channel.
Mm-hmm.
And someone was asking how I establish boundaries with non-Muslims as a Muslim. I was thinking about it, and I just feel like in general, because I wear the hijab, I haven't had to do that much.
Boundaries?
Yeah.
Like, what type of boundaries would you set?
Like, in social settings, like, for example, an example of this may be setting the boundary of you don't drink.
Mm.
It's like people... Or a lot of the people that I surround myself with or I interact with already kind of assume or know that
you
I
know
don't do
insane.
That.
At Berkeley, they don't assume or know.
They what?
They don't assume or know. They'd be like, F, I come up with this party. And I'm just like, I don't party.
Oh, that's funny.
At a party.
That's funny.
Right. They just don't know, but it's okay.
I think it depends on who you're navigating. But I feel like, also, if you answer it, like, if you tell them that, they're not going to be like, oh my god, let loose.
Do you know what's
like,
insane?
Free yourself.
No, but you, I feel like now that I've like come to, like, now that I'm in spaces where I'm not with Muslims, like, I'm gonna actually try to have a conversation with people just because I remember I was talking to someone and they were like, yeah, in fact, I know why you don't talk to guys. And I was like, why? Because they're gonna get arranged marriage. I was just
what?
Like, okay.
Okay. Was this a non-Muslim speaking?
It was a non-Muslim.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. People attribute funny. Like Desi and Arab culture onto like all Muslims in general, and it's like, that's not our culture though.
No, but it was so funny. And
that's
no,
so funny
I,
though.
She read it from a good attention. Like, she was just like, because you're like, she said so like, because you're gonna get everybody's marriage. I was just like,
she was naive.
We all laughed. Oh my
I
god,
love
it
that.
Was too funny. Not I feel like now I'm having a conversation because girl, I'm not getting arranged marriage.
Yeah, no, don't get it twisted.
And she said, but I'm like a girl that's gonna get arranged. Says that.
No, people are so funny sometimes.
No, not like you knew that conversation.
You really do.
That was okay.
That's crazy. Pretend like social expectations don't exist. What would you be doing with your 20s?
Okay, social expectations. I'm gonna add on to the fact. Can I add like even like what the like how much money you're making?
Yeah.
Would that be a social expectation? For social expectations, if it's like getting married because it's a social expectation, I feel like for me it wouldn't just apply just because I like kids, I want to have a lot of kids, so that wouldn't apply, I'll be honest with you, right? But social expectation, when it comes to getting a job just because of this cutthroat like economy, I would be like a teacher, or I would go like to Africa.
Aww,
I'd probably
that.
Work in Africa because I work within Africa, not work at Africa's not a continent, but work like in East Africa.
In different countries.
In different countries, teach English or something.
I love that. Because I feel like when we're first gen, or when our parents immigrated here, and especially being African, they have all of these expectations, like become a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, something
mm-hmm.
that'll make you a lot of money. There are societal expectations on us that make it unrealistic to
mm-hmm.
pursue things purely out of passion.
I agree.
And I think sometimes like white people just do not understand that. Like, when I tell people that, they tell me, no, just do what you want. Like,
oh
pursue your dreams.
You're so funny. We're talking to this guy. Literally, we just came out of a meeting. He told me that his son, literally, we're having this conversation. His son has
today.
300,
today?
200,
today.
400
cows.
Because we're talking to him about
cows.
Yeah, cows.
Like the
farm.
Animal?
Cow. Yeah, and he has a... And we're telling him that it's different just because, like, your son's white. He has
yes.
his dad to rely on. I don't have my dad to rely on. I don't have my mom to rely on. Like,
exactly.
This is like I'm gonna make it. Like, I'm so sorry. Like,
yeah, we gotta make money to take care of our families.
And he was also saying just do crack, just live your life. Don't
just
crack.
Just do crack is crazy.
Like,
no, seriously. they just have no concept of it. It's because Americans are used to a very individualistic society, and our cultures are very community oriented. So mm-hmm. I think that's where it comes from. It's always nice to find a balance, though, like pursue mm-hmm. things, pursue a career that you find that you're interested in, that's mm-hmm. also going to provide for you financially, and on the side pursue things that you're genuinely passionate about,
which is, yeah, I feel like I still would do what I want to do, just like probably be a teacher, like in my mid after working for a minute. I would still want to be a teacher. I want to go travel. I'm gonna travel for sure.
Definitely travel. Let me know if you're ever in Mauritania.
I'm out there. I'm gonna go to Mauritania.
Yeah. I was gonna say, like, yeah,
I don't even think I would go to Somalia. I would go to visit, but I would never like stay there permanently. Like, I want to go to Uganda, I want to go to Tanzania, I want to go to Zambia, I want to go visit Nigeria, Jamaica.
Nigeria, but not Mauritania. Mauritania is right there.
Yeah, I'll go to Mauritania, I'll go to Senegal.
Okay.
For sure. Yeah. I'll check out my people out there. But other than that, I want to, like, I feel like time should be an essence of what you want to do. So I don't know if I want to live by myself yet. I don't think I want to, just because I want to be surrounded by my family after I graduate. But, like, just do whatever I want to do without nobody saying anything or having that social expectation to do anything, like get married, have kids, be a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah, it's crazy because you guys were telling me about the people in San Diego that
they get married, yeah.
They just graduate high school and they get married right away, which is crazy. But
also, love has no age.
Yeah, I can get behind that. I just think it's harder.
You think so?
I think it's harder to, like, fully dedicate your life and pursue what you want to pursue.
Yeah.
Like, to focus on school and to prioritize your dreams when you're married to someone. Because you have to compromise.
Same thing, though. You have to compromise if you, like...
Inherently, you have to compromise.
Inherently, for what?
For example, you just graduated college, you want to take this job opportunity in New York, but you're married to someone whose family is in California and who wants to settle down in California.
But that's... I feel like that for sure, inherently, you would have to... That's a sacrifice you would have to make.
Yeah.
But I feel like you could still pursue your dreams with whoever you are with. Like, you don't have to stop your dreams and make, like, a full stop just because you're married. That would just, like, what's the point of being married to them, no?
That's true. A healthy balance is important.
Yeah, the only thing that I would just say about being married young is, like, the money aspect. But even then, like, we're not supposed to be worried about that.
You're right.
Because, like, Allah's supposed to be blessing us and giving us the benefit that we need.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Where can they find you on social media?
Okay, you guys can follow me at ANNFACC. That's my main account. You guys can follow that.
No Berkeley in the bio.
I don't go to Berkeley. Please don't ask me about Berkeley. Oh yeah, follow me on TikTok. Let me look at my name right now.
Her TikToks are fire. She used to be posting every day, and I would literally look forward to when she would post her TikToks.
ANNFACCC. But it was nice talking to you guys. Hopefully you guys liked the conversation.
I hope you guys enjoyed this week's podcast episode. As I mentioned at the beginning, I'm going to have all of those resources that I mentioned linked in the show notes, as well as if you want to go follow Anfac on her social media, I'll have all of her social media links in the description box. I will chat with you guys next week. Bye.